Hello, Lifebook members. John Butcher here. Welcome to another episode of Lifebook's 12 Category Smart Millionaire Series. So happy to have you here with me today. Today, I've got the privilege of interviewing one of my good friends. His name is Chris Ashby. And Chris, as you'll discover, has had a shockingly diverse career. You're not going to believe his story, but it's true. He graduated from the California State University at Fullerton with an undergraduate degree in music, and he began a career that led him to become a world-class musician. I'm talking about absolutely world-class. Played with the greatest orchestras in the world, the greatest conductors in the world, and the greatest venues in the world. Then, when he was literally at the very top of his game, he had a massive realization that caused a major shift in both his personal and professional trajectory, which you'll learn about in this interview, and Chris decided to totally reinvent his life and go into business. He got a full scholarship to USC and got both his master's and his doctoral degrees. Then he went on to get an MBA from the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom, and he completed his postdoctoral research at Fulbright Scholar in Seville, Spain. Chris is maybe the best educated Lifebook member ever. And then he went into business. He became a very successful businessman and entrepreneur. He's now got over 25 years of experience, mainly in structured finance, mergers and acquisitions, business development in the telecommunications industry, the banking industry, and real estate sectors. He's a sought-after presenter and keynote speaker for huge organizations like the European Venture Capital Association, the Central European Bankers Forum, and he lives an amazing life. He lives on the island of Caracal in the Grenadines when he's not traveling or working on his philanthropic adventures. He's an amazing guy with an amazing story, and it's my pleasure to welcome Lifebook member Chris Ashby to the call. Hello, Christopher. Welcome.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here, man. Christopher, you have had an almost shockingly diverse career. I mean, when I take a look at, you know, that your education, the industries you started in, and just everything that you've done, it's just mind-boggling. And so my first question is going to be really, really interesting, probably a little unfair, and that is, what would you say is the single most important thing that you've learned about making money and creating wealth in this amazingly diverse career of yours?
Well, yes, what I would say is it's absolutely essential to be very clear about what wealth means to you. And specifically from the standpoint of one's balance sheet, I would not include the assumed or unbiased value of your personal residence, jewelry, cars, or artwork unless you have an immediate and legitimate offer to purchase them. It's just my philosophy. You might think you are a millionaire due to the rising value of your home or the recent article in the New York Times talking about the emerging market for contemporary Ethiopian art, though I think that the true measure of wealth is in the amount of time you can maintain your life, assuming you're living in process of fulfilling your last vision, from your current and income-producing assets if you stop working. And I'll get real specific and quantify that. If your life costs you 10 grand a month to live and you have 120,000 of combined income and current assets, then you are 1 year rich. If your investment income is equal to or greater than this number, then you are infinitely wealthy. I personally know a few individuals who have balance sheets with assets in excess of $100 million that could not write a check for 100 grand. So I think the really important lesson is to be brutally honest about this number, and you might see some interesting things appear in your life.
That's very, very interesting. So get crystal clear on what wealth means to you.
Yes, okay. Really clear. And you probably can't do it yourself because we all, as a wonderful phrase I think Damien Lupo told me about, was called smoke hopium. We're lighting the hopium pipe at all times, and I think that that's what happens when we look at ourselves financially. So get really clear about where you are, because it's hard to fulfill your life's vision when you've got someone knocking the door or you're getting notices that you're going to be kicked out of your house. So I think get really clear on, you know, what you got to do to define your wealth and be wealth. I mean, I have a friend that makes $5,000 a month, and he is a very wealthy guy. I have a friend that makes about $300 million a year, and he's strapped.
So true. It's all completely relative. That's a
very,
very interesting answer. Okay, my next question. out of all of the different industries that you've worked in, and I've known you for a while, and I've known the really unique things that you go into, mining, and you know, you've got a huge financial background. What was the best financial move that you ever made in your career, Christopher?
I took a real hard and painful look at the financial metrics of my first career, which is as a classical musician. I have a doctorate in music amongst other doctorates. I'm a student of Segovia as a child. I play Carnegie Hall. I made a record at Abbey Road. These things look pretty good until I realized, through conversations with a guy in the Narita Airport in Japan, that I would never create any wealth. So what I did was I ceased doing everything I was doing in that profession and completely reinvented and retrained myself to have a career in finance. I realized that digging the ditch to the wealth was much more difficult than actually just putting your foot into the river of wealth. So it took about 2 years from pulling the plug before the money started to flow to me. And though the velocity of the flow has increased and waned based on my many endeavors, the net effect is still positive. So in summary, I stopped digging the hole that I was in, and that was the best financial move I ever made.
That took so much courage. I can't even imagine how much courage that took.
Yeah, it took a lot of courage, and it was like losing a dear, dear, dear friend, because, you know, playing music is such a personal thing, and I still love it deeply, but I had to say goodbye to that friend, and it wasn't sort of a general goodbye. It was like, hey, you're out of here. And so it was very difficult.
Wow, that's unbelievable, but yet it turned out to be the best financial move you ever made.
Yeah, I became wealthy, and otherwise, you know, about a month and a half ago, I was in a restaurant in, I think I was in Caracas. No, I was in Montenegro. I was in a restaurant, fantastic restaurant, beautiful surroundings. I just went there with a friend on his boat, and there's a guy in the restaurant who was playing, and he was a brilliant, absolutely brilliant violinist. I mean, he was playing second partita by Bach, the Chaconne, which is just this monumental, complicated piece. And, you know, meanwhile, people are dining and walking around, and I thought, there for the grace of God go I. So even more, focused me on the gratitude that I made that financial move. Not that his life, I didn't know his life, was not a great life. It's just that it wouldn't have worked for me. So that it wasn't really a financial move. It was a emotional career move.
And an overall quality of life move. Look at the immense impact it's had on your overall quality of life.
Oh, yeah, and I'm not even done yet. I'll probably change again at least 3 or 4 times before this journey is over, so I'm still moving.
You're the David Bowie of careers, chameleon. All right, here's another great question for you, seeing as how you've just done so many different things in so many different industries. What was your biggest financial mistake that you've ever made?
That's really easy, because I have a lot of little ones, but I got a really big one. So I have a friend who's a billionaire, and he invited me to co-invest in one of his companies. And, you know, I was going to be chairman of the board and going to get to go to the Middle East where the company was 2 or 3 times a year, which excited me because the travel is wonderful. So my intellectual mind and experience and rational mind said, run the hell away. Though my, you know, sort of, I'll call it the reptilian ego and greed said to go forward because, hey, this guy's a billionaire and what he touches turns to gold. So basically, I found out after about, so I lost a lot of money. My friend lost around $9 million, which is just a rounding error on his balance sheet, and my loss knocked the wind out of me. What I learned is that, the bottom line is that, I didn't learn it, I knew it, is that investing is an intellectual endeavor. If you let your ego and greed get in front of your intellect, you're going to be in trouble. If you don't have any financial or domain-specific intelligence in a given area, just run away. And, you know, I was like my ego and my greed, which I guess I have a lot of, got in front of me, and I took a stomach punch on this one. So I recovered, but it was shocking, because had I been engaged to go in and do diligence on this company, my report to my client would have been run away and get ready to take a big loss on your K-1. But instead, I went into it.
Interesting. So it was an area that you did not have expertise in, and you were sort of banking on the expertise of your partner?
No, he doesn't have any expertise at all in this area. He just has lots of money. I was banking on my cleverness, and basically I saw an opportunity to take the company public. It was a similar industry. In a similar industry, there have been some significant private equity investments in the recent times of, you know, valuations north of $1 billion, and I just thought that, you know, it looked like a good thing, and I did not have a domain expertise in this area. I had some people who were reasonably intelligent, but they were working in the company, so I violated every cardinal rule which I have embraced to order to achieve what I've achieved so far. So I got greedy and stupid.
And how did you solve that problem? How did you get out of that, Christopher?
Lost seven figures, went over to the company and told every one of them very clearly about where the problem was, and I asked senior management, I said, if you believe in this project so much, I'm cutting your salaries for a year, so do you believe it enough to take stock options? And they all said, no, we can't do it, our wives won't like us, and I shut the company immediately.
Wow.
I went into complete Armageddon mode, and you know, if you believe in a company and someone asks you to take a salary cut, you might say, I take a little cut. If you ask someone to not take a salary at all in exchange for options or for equity in the company and they want to run away, then their heart isn't in it at all. And so I killed the company.
I learned that lesson too. So in this case, to solve your, to correct this mistake, you literally just walked away from it and took the loss.
I walked away and took the loss. I mean, there's other things I did to make sure the people who had duped me and my other investors would not do that again. But yes, on the benevolent side, I walked away and took my losses.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. What is your favorite financial strategy that you've discovered on your journey?
Well, always make money is number one, though I don't really have any favorite financial strategy because to make sure to my best ability, I guess, is to quantify and understand the inherent and unforeseen risk. I would say, you know, I'm very involved with direct investment in emerging markets, specifically, as you mentioned earlier, the mining, financial services, and real estate sectors. And I think a strategy I have now, I got two developments that I'm working on in the Caribbean, and I want to say I'm not a real estate developer, I'm just an entrepreneur. And the creation is a reflection of the things that are important in my life, namely yoga, boating, nature, aesthetic beauty, and low barrier to entry for the customers. So I'm reasonably certain that there is a material amount of money to be made, though the premise and strategy behind this particular group of investments is to create something that can serve people who also share the important things that are prevalent and important in my quality of life. I will make money, but maybe the current financial strategy in this is to do something that you know, again, I've done enough spreadsheeting and analysis and risk mitigation in this thing that, I mean, it's pretty hard to lose, but, you know, maybe a strategy now, rather than just sort of just trying to go in and make a huge margin, is to do something that mirrors my vision and other people's vision who I love and care for in my life. And I think that to attract a community of those kind of people would be very exciting and a great strategy financially also.
Absolutely, and just improve your overall quality of life as a result.
Yes, absolutely.
For sure. Okay, Christopher, if you could offer one simple piece of financial advice to our listeners, what would it be?
Well, number one, if you don't think money is important, you'll never have any. End of story. Get very clear on the metrics of your given profession and make sure to your best ability that your quality of life and life's vision can be supported in your vocational endeavors. Obviously, spend less than you make, and before you invest the difference, as the old saying goes, make sure that you're using your brain and not your emotions, but really make sure that you're, you know, that your profession can give you what you want. I mean, if you're, you know, I don't know, teaching yoga, and there's nothing against yoga teachers. I don't know what yoga teachers made. It's a wonderful profession. But if you're a yoga teacher and, you know, you want to, you know, you see yourself in 3 or 4 years' time without inheritance, chartering a G4 and flying to your Perini Navi in Montenegro, you're probably smoking something. So just be really clear that the metrics of your given profession, without rationalization, can support your quality of life. And it's a very important issue. We have a finite period of time here, and it's, money isn't everything by any means at all, but I believe realizing the vision of your life is all there is, and make sure you can do that. And so if your vocation can't support that, figure out why, and if it can't, maybe you might want to change. It's never too late to make a change.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Christopher. There was a lot of wisdom packed into a very short period of time, and I really appreciate you being here with me.
My pleasure, and thank you for what you've created. You're just doing a wonderful thing, and it's helped me so much. And I embrace the Lifebook community. I embrace working in my Lifebook on a consistent basis, and I just the effects are enormous. So thank you for what you've done, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak about the subject that has consumed a great part of my life and probably will consume a lot of my life in the future.
Thanks for the kind words, and we'll definitely be talking about this again. Take care, Christopher.
Thank you. Bye-bye.